Welcome to the Business Bookshelf Podcast. I'm your host, Lance Pepler. Like you, I'm a lifetime learner and find books one of the best ways to do this. The purpose of this podcast, then, is to interview authors of new business books, get insights into their thinking, lives, and businesses, all in a light, friendly manner. Today, my guest is Karis Anderson. Karis is a seasoned professional who is passionate about entrepreneurship, empowering people, growing leaders, and helping people identify and operate in their strengths. Karis believes that leadership of self, others, and organizations is the answer to all the challenges and opportunities in the world today. Karis is the author of the book, Intelligence Isn't Enough. The book includes advice and anecdotes from 30 successful Black leaders who have worked across Africa, Europe, and North America. Intelligence Isn't Enough aims to empower young Black graduates who have just entered the workforce and Black professionals already at work. Anderson guides leaders on how to survive and thrive in corporate spaces, how to take a more strategic approach to their careers, and how to understand themselves and others more deeply. Enjoy the interview.
Thank you so much for having me, Lance.
So, Karis, where am I speaking to you from today?
So my accent is from Alabama in the United States, but my body is physically located in Morningside.
In Johannesburg, South Africa. And so your accent, as you said, is from Alabama. What brought you to South Africa?
You know, Lance, I wish it was a more liberated story, but it's actually a man. I moved here because my husband was living here. So we dated, were engaged, even married for a year, for 3.5 years before I moved to South Africa in 2011. And my husband is also not South African, by the way. He's Zimbabwean American, first generation American, born and raised in New York, but his parents were born and raised in Zimbabwe.
Interesting. Last week, I interviewed two people for the podcast and both of them were born in Zimbabwe. So it's quite a common thread for me at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Zimbabweans are great people.
Definitely. Where did you meet him?
We met actually at Harvard Business School. My husband is class of 2005 and I'm class of 2006. So we live in the same dormitory. That's how we met. Yeah.
And was it a long distance relationship for a while?
Yeah, 3.5 years.
Sure. That's tough.
A long time. Yeah.
But you overcame it, thank goodness, and congratulations. Anyway, enough about that. I want to speak to you about your fantastic book, which I had the privilege of reading, Intelligence Isn't Enough, with the subtitle of A Black Professional's Guide to Thriving in the Workplace. And I really, really enjoyed it. I need to have a thorough read of it now again. So maybe, Karis, can you start by giving us an overview of the book and your purpose for writing it?
So I would say the overview of the book, I'll speak to the framework that I have, you know, shared in the early chapters of the book, which is really knowing yourself, knowing other people, knowing your environment, and kind of integrating the knowledge from all three of those areas, and using that to really determine what is your personal brand, what is your communication style, so that you can maximize your impact. That's really kind of the summary of the book, you know, in a really short couple of sentences. I'm really just trying to help individuals, you know, understand themselves more deeply, understand other people, build better relationships so that they can have more fun and more impact at work.
Did you find that young people, and maybe particularly Black young people, were heading into the workplace and they needed a guide? Is that what you were discovering? And so you decided to write a guide for them?
Absolutely. I just saw, you know, and I ran a leadership development program when I worked at McKinsey and Company when I first moved to South Africa. And I just saw these really talented Black professionals, had the right pedigree, the right degrees, you know, the right majors in university, and they, you know, were coming into these corporate spaces and really didn't know how to navigate them. And I just saw a lot of frustration. You know, and some of them, I think, just bowed out completely. They were like, well, I'm just going to start a business. Like, I can't do this. You know, so I wanted to be able to share some knowledge with people so that everybody wasn't starting from scratch. You know, everybody shouldn't be starting. Every generation shouldn't be starting from ground zero. You know, so I wanted to share what I've learned, what these 30 people that I interviewed, what they've learned, what they would share with young people. And also, you know, I don't propose to have all the answers, but I do know a lot of the questions that young people should be asking. So I put a lot of those questions in the book as well, so they could ask the right questions and figure out what works in their environment, because what works at McKinsey might not work somewhere else and vice versa. Mm. So it is about, you know, you figuring it out, but you need to know what you need to be asking to do that.
I worked at Oracle for 14 years and the exact same thing, because we had, you know, graduates coming in all the time and you'd take them on a program, but actually the first month or two, you'd have to teach them all the soft skills and, you know, integrate them into the working environment from university. So okay. I think your book is really, really needed.
Yeah.
And second thing is that I've got two young daughters, so quite young at the moment, 6 and 8, but I want them to read your book. And so, you know, when they're going into any kind of, even high school in a way, that they get a growth mindset yeah. instead of a fixed mindset and all those kind of things that you talk about in your book for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think I want, you know, younger people to read these books. Because I think the younger, you know, obviously it gets might be too young, but when it's that appropriate age and you can really digest what I'm sharing, I think it's really important, because I think we really set young people up for failure when all we talk about from kindergarten through university is subject matter, is a hardcore subject matters. It's all about technical skills. And then when we get them into the workplace, you know, it's almost like bait and switch. Like, oh, okay, we know this is what we've been telling you for the last, you know, 15, 16 years, but all of a sudden, now the rules have changed. And that, you know, everything we've been telling you is only 30% of what makes you successful. The other 70% is all this other stuff we never told you about. Okay, go be successful now. So I feel like it's very unfair. You know, so I feel like we need to start teaching these lessons like in high school. And look, it's kind of whatever pieces of the information make sense. Like you're saying, the different mindsets, learning how to get along with people, how to deal with conflict. You know, you shouldn't have to wait until you're 22, 23 years old to learn these lessons. Like we need to be learning them all along so that we're prepared when we step into the workspace.
Absolutely. And I love how you start your book, because you do exactly that. And you talk about the whole new world in the whole new world chapter, where you've got good news and bad news. And maybe you could just go through that again a little bit. So the good news, you know, and the bad news in a nutshell. I know you just said that, but maybe repeat it in a way.
Yeah, so I mean, the good news is, you know, you finished. If I'm speaking to, you know, a young professional, it's like, okay, you got the piece of paper that you worked so hard to get, and you've made it through this really arduous interview process to get into whatever is this fantastic company you've gotten this offer from. That's the good news. You're going to be able to support yourself. Maybe you'll even be able to help your family, you know, because you've gotten this great job. That's the good news. The bad news. Unfortunately, is that all that stuff we've been telling you about is probably only 30% of what's going to make you successful in this job. And the other 70% is all these other things we never told you about. And that's the sad part for me, because it is, like I said, it's quite bait and switch. I mean, I went to Harvard Business School and nobody really talked in that space about how to be successful once you get the job. Everybody, there's so many resources, Lance, out here about how to write a CV, how to perfect an interview, you know, but nobody, I feel like, is talking in a substantive way about how can I be successful once I'm in the space? How can I advance? How do I build the right relationships? What are some of the maybe challenges I might run into from a communication or conflict standpoint? How do I resolve those things? Most people are not talking about that. And I don't know if there's just an assumption that, oh, you're smart, you've got the right degrees, you'll figure it out. But I'm like, no, I think these skills need to be taught.
Yes. Yes, yes, definitely. I loved your maximizing your impact diagram, and I know this is a podcast, and so we'll have to talk through it. Do you possibly have it in front of you, or can you memorize it and go through what the different elements of that impact diagram is?
Yeah, I can tell you. I mean, it's basically three circles, and there is a point at which the circles overlap kind of in the middle. There's a little piece of every circle where there's a bit of overlap. Yeah. And for me, it's the maximizing or understanding yourself is one circle. Understanding others is the second circle. And then understanding your environment is the third circle. And where those three circles overlap in the middle is where I feel like that's the point of your maximum impact, is once you have the understanding of all three. And if you're missing one component, you're not going to be able to maximize the impact in that environment. You know, if you don't understand yourself, I mean, it's going to be really challenging for you to be able to manage yourself, to know if you're in the right place, if you're serving your purpose, whatever that is. You got to know yourself. You got to know what your own emotional triggers are, so that when you come across people, you know, who kind of stomp on those triggers, you know how to manage yourself.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, you're the only person you really can control. You can't control other people. Mm-hmm. And so you really have to know yourself. You have to know your strengths so you can figure out what kind of environment and what type of role is going to serve me best. You know, so if you know your weaknesses, or your areas of development, if you don't know these things, it's very hard for you to figure out where you should be. How do you interact? How do you deal with different types of personalities? If you're missing the others part, if you don't know how to deal with people, I mean, because every business is a people business. I don't care what the business is. If you don't know how to deal with people, I mean, unless you are like a one-man show, but even then, you've got customers. You've got to know how to deal with people. And then the third one is just knowing that environment. Because like I said before, what works at McKinsey might not work at Deloitte. What works at Deloitte might not work at McKinsey. Even, you know, companies that are in the same industry, you can't behave in the same way because those cultures are very different. So how do you communicate, build relationships, show up in a way that speaks to that particular culture? You got to know that environment. So if you don't know that, that's also going to impact your ability to have impact. Sorry to use the word twice in a sentence, but you're not going to be able to have maximum impact without understanding all three.
And don't you think we should be like kind and gentle to ourselves as well? Because although I've got young children, I'm actually 50. I turned 50 last month. And the thing
Happy
is
birthday.
That... Thank you. I am just coming into knowing these different things at 50. Like, no, I know I've moved from Oracle into a small business, so I need to like readjust my environment. I'm learning myself now, and I can remember myself when I was 20 and even 30s, that I didn't know myself and I didn't know how to deal with others. And so it's been a long process and for me to get to where I am today.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think your story, Lance, your story is not uncommon. Like I coach people as part of my role at Korn Ferry, and some of my coachees have been working 20, 30 years. And they're also just now kind of exploring who they are as people and really starting to learn some of the softer skills. And that's why I'm really passionate about trying to get younger people to start thinking about these different elements, because it's important and we shouldn't be waiting. We really shouldn't.
So I've interviewed now, got 113 episodes of the podcast, and at least half of them have been around purpose in some shape or other. Or purpose has come up during the conversation, and your book has purpose in it as well. So how important is it to know your purpose and then to execute on your purpose?
I think it's vastly important, right? Because for me, I think it helps you make decisions. So if you know kind of the, even, you know, and it doesn't have to be, I know to the very granular level what I want to do, but it's like, I kind of have a broad idea. I think it helps you make decisions, right? Because as a bright person, as a talented person with, you know, degrees, you're going to have so many opportunities that are thrown at you, but the purpose kind of helps serve as that guide. Like which one of these opportunities is going to maybe get me closer to that? I also think your purpose helps you deal with some of the sacrifices you have to make. One of the people I interviewed in the book, Achileke, I think he talked in there about trade-offs. So you're going to have to make trade-offs. But if you don't have a purpose, I think you can get really frustrated because you're like, well, why am I sacrificing my weekends? And why am I working these long hours? And why am I, you know, at least before COVID, why am I always on a plane?
Yeah.
You know, sacrificing my social life and being with my family and friends. If you don't have a purpose, I think you have a lot of frustration. But if you have a purpose, then you know why you're making those sacrifices. And it just helps you make peace with them a little bit easier.
And you are going to have to pay your dues at the beginning, aren't you?
Well, you know, I think there's trade-offs all the way along, right? I think it's just different trade-offs.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's You know, because I think about most really successful people, they work hard.
Yes.
You know, they sacrifice a lot of time. So, you know, maybe it's a matter of you get a little bit more agency over how you spend that extra, how you spend that time working. Maybe you get a little bit more, you know, autonomy, or, you know, you can decide how you spend those long hours working. But I feel like, you know, there's always going to be some sort of trade-offs, and it's just a matter of figuring out what are those trade-offs.
Yeah.
And making peace with them. Yeah.
Yeah. Next week, I interview a very successful entrepreneur who's written a book on almost like work-life balance, you know, and how you should, you know, try and work that in. But the thing is that he writes in his book about when he was in his 20s and he went to parties and he was the only person on his laptop working at a party. And one of the things I want to ask him is, you know, did you, if you look back in your 20s, surely that was the time for work in a way. I mean, you can't, maybe you didn't have work-life balance in your 20s because that was the time for work, you know, single, getting ahead, those kind of things. And now when you're older, you're going to have children, you're going to have marriages, and maybe that's when work-life balance kicks in, maybe. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, you know, your life as a single person is very different than when you get married. I don't have children, but I have, you know, friends who have kids, you know, so I know that it's a tremendous sacrifice to be a parent.
Yes.
I think it's just, you've got to get, you know, I think the more demands you have on your time, you know, and I even talk about this a little bit in the book, like life is only going to get busier from this point, you know, for whoever's reading it, you know,
yeah.
You know, especially if I'm talking to a young professional, it's like, you might get married, you might have children, you might go back to school, you know, your responsibilities at work are going to increase. Maybe you have to take care of an elderly parent at some point. So it's also just about being strategic about how you use your time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so maybe when you were in your 20s and you were single, you could go to every networking event at work. But now you've got to figure out, okay, which ones are the ones that are most important for my career? Which ones are going to have people there that I really need to connect with and build relationships with? And those are the ones that I attend, you know? So I think maybe, you know, the more demands you have on your time, you got to be more strategic about how you spend your time.
Mm. And you talk about like taking ownership of things, and that really is it. Like you got to take ownership of your life, and no one is going to, you know, say to you, when things go wrong, or, you know, relationships break, or things don't go well, you are responsible for your life. Maybe you can talk a little bit
Absolutely.
About that, you know, taking ownership of the various aspects of your life.
Yeah. And this is, you know, a concept I was introduced to when I was actually at McKinsey, and it really did click for me. You know, this concept of ownership is the fact that you solve problems at work as if they were your own problems.
Mm.
You know, they're not your manager's problems, they're not the client or the customer's problems. Think about how you would solve that problem. I mean, I use this example in the book, you know, if a friend came to me and said, I'm being evicted, you know, I would do what I could to help the person, right? But if I find out that I'm being evicted from my apartment, it's a whole different ballgame. I'm gonna work much harder to solve my own problem, right? Because it's impacting me directly. So, and that's the attitude that we need to take at work. We have to own our work. And that, you know, and I speak about basically three areas of ownership in the book, you know, owning your career, owning your development. And I think I talk about owning the office culture as well, right? So you got to own your work, own your career, and own the culture of the office as potentially as a young leader in your office. And I would add a fourth one now that I thought about it, is really owning your relationships at work too.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, I think at the end of the day, ownership is about not letting obstacles get in the way. And you just keep pushing, 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 because that's what you would do if you were solving your own problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would just say, oh, well, I don't have anywhere to live. I guess, you know, I'm just going to be homeless. You're like, no, I'm going to call friends. I'm going to go stay at a shelter. I'm going to do everything I can to solve that problem, because you truly own it. And that's the way you have to approach your work too, and your career.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And then you talk about mindsets around your beliefs, patterns, perspectives, perceptions. Yeah. How do you get your mind right so that you can tackle these different, you know, areas of your life and work, obviously? Yeah.
And I, at the end of that chapter, I talk about, you know, different strategies, right?
Mm.
I mean, there's an element of maybe you need to go to therapy. I know that Africans, in general or not necessarily. I don't know if there's a big therapy movement here on the continent. I haven't seen it. If there is one, I may have missed it. But I'm like, maybe you need to go see a psychologist or a counselor. Because if you've got trauma from the past that, you know, because I think that's what a lot of it is, right? We've got unresolved childhood trauma. And you know, I may connect, I tell stories in the book about, you know, how some of those connections can impact us now. Because I think sometimes people feel like, oh, that's in the past, I'm over that, you know, but we don't always see how things are impacting us at work.
Yeah.
Because of some of that trauma. I mean, I tell the story in the book about a lady that I was working with who struggled to ask for help because she wasn't really given that room to ask for help as a child. And so she really struggled to do it at work.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, in the space that she was in, asking for help was critical because, you know, that environment was all about speed and getting things done in a really efficient way. And she couldn't do it on her own. So she had to ask for help.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, or figuring out whatever it is that works for you. Maybe it's meditation, maybe it's prayer, you know, reading self-help books. You know, but everybody's got to get a plan to work through, you know, some of our mindset issues because we all have them because we were all raised by imperfect people. That's how I know we all have them.
and I always think of myself now again as being 50 and still having mindset and, you know, problems and how to focus. And it's just something that you have to fight with and grapple with your entire life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, I heard somebody say that, You live the first 18 years of your life and then you spend whatever the balance is trying to get over what happened in the first 18. And it's very, very true.
Yeah. Now, Kara, it's not a big section of your book at all, but I'll just like to address it quickly because your heading for your book is A Black Professional's Guide to Thriving in the Workplace. Can you talk to us a little bit about racism in the workplace? Is it, you know, is it a reality, obviously? And how do, you know, young Black professionals encounter racism if they encounter it in the workplace?
So, you know, when I speak with young Black talent, I definitely believe there is racism, to be honest. I mean, if you think about it too, I mean, South Africa is a fairly young democracy. I mean, what are you guys, 27 years in?
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I look at the U.S., who's, you know, technically farther along in the journey, but you see, we have a lot of work to do, you know, and there was someone, I can't remember if it was Brian Stevenson who heads the Equal Justice Initiative in the US or a guy named Ibram Kendi. He's a professor and an author. I can't remember which one of them said it, but I want to give one of them credit. But, you know, they basically said, you know, when the slaves were freed in America, nobody really addressed the belief of white supremacy that allowed slavery to go on for so long. It was just like, okay, they're free now, but have we addressed the fundamental belief, right, around why we thought that slavery was okay for all these hundreds of years? And it's kind of the same thing here in South Africa. Where was the real kind of, you know, addressing of the mindset that allowed apartheid to go on for so long? And have we, and I don't think it was ever fully addressed, and people bring those same mindsets into a corporate space. But I think what people do is very subtle. I don't necessarily think it's very overt. I think a lot of it is very covert racism in corporate South Africa. I think, you know, it's because I've talked to people who said, you know, I was left off of meeting invitations for weeks for meetings I should have been at that nobody told me about, you know, or I was just, you know, victimized in a way. I was given really harsh feedback. You know, I feel like the people who had influence and power were able to use that to turn other people against me. You know, so I think it's, you know, people getting overlooked for promotions and opportunities, having people who are less qualified, getting opportunities, you know. So those are the sorts of things that I think show up in corporate South Africa. And I think, you know, because everybody's focused on BEE, people think, well, we've got Black people in the space, it's all good. But I'm like, no, but are they happy? Are they engaged? Do they feel included? Do you just cycle through Black people, you know, on a regular basis? You can't keep Black people in your organization. That's the kind of, you know, people need to start going underneath and understanding what's the root cause of some of this turnover and some of this, you know, disengagement.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And being involved in the podcast, I am, you know, there is definitely a problem, obviously, but I am seeing that things are happening. Like my last interview was with an author who wrote a book called And Ladies Get Paid. And she, you know, talking about movements for, you know, women getting paid. So, you know, obviously the sexism in the workplace as well, and how that is changing. Like the vice president of the United States is the first, you know, black lady to be, and she's very likely to be president in 4 years' time, hopefully. And then there's such an uptake of women black leaders like yourself in America, who I've interviewed at least three or four, who are now forming these networks and promoting, you know, female black leaders in the workplace, trying to, you know, get people to be more CEOs and leaders who are you know, African-American, who I've interviewed. And so hopefully it's changing. I really, really hope that it's changing for the younger generations who are coming through.
I hope so too. I think the younger generation, you know, a good majority of them are very, very liberal. I think they're very much about, you know, who are you on the inside versus what you look like on the outside. Mm-hmm. I think they're much more open-minded. So, you know, I hope that helps turn the tide, but we still have a long way to go in America and South Africa.
Yeah. And you definitely have to be tough and push through it. Definitely. Yeah. So the last thing I want to talk to you about your book before I get onto you for a little bit is personal branding, and which is absolutely mm-hmm. vital. It's never been more important with LinkedIn, social media, and you need to have your own brand outside of your company brand. You know, they almost need to be two separate entities. Mm. Can you talk to us a little bit about how a young person needs to go about building their brand?
So, I mean, you know, let's even define what a brand is. I mean, that is, a brand is basically the emotions, the words that people associate with you. What words come to mind, you know, when I say Lance, when you're not in the room? What do people think of? What space do you occupy in people's heads? That's really what a brand is. You know, and if you think about any sort of product, like, you know, if you think about Woolworths or Checkers or Spar, like when you say those words to people, there's a set of words or emotions that come to mind. And it's the same thing with us, right? So we want to be able to put ourselves, you know, in a certain position in people's heads. And we do that by the way that we deliver, the way that we speak, the way that we dress, our social media profiles, just how we show up in general, you know, how engaged are we, right? Those are the things that shape people's, you know, brand or kind of image of us. And we just need to always be thoughtful. And I think, you know, once again, this is a topic that nobody talked about when I was graduating from either university or from graduate school, and it's uber important. I used to tell people when I, because I, like I said, I ran a leadership program at McKinsey. I used to tell young people, if you turn over a PowerPoint presentation or an Excel document to the senior person managing you, and it's got mistakes, you know, incorrect numbers, that's your brand on that Excel spreadsheet. This is what, you know, or that PowerPoint, this is what you're being known for, is somebody who turns in shoddy work. You know, somebody that can't really be trusted or depended on. So you just need to be thinking about that. You know, if you're young and you look young, the way, if you dress in a certain way, you're kind of conveying to people that you're reminding people that you're really young and maybe that you don't have the experience. So dressing up can kind of elevate your level of credibility. So you need to be thinking about how you dress, you know, what you're drawing attention to, you know, in terms of how you dress. So those are the sorts of things that people need to be thinking about. And I know sometimes, you know, I was having a conversation with someone the other day and they're like, well, if you're early in your career, isn't it too young to have a brand? And I'm like, no, it's never, I don't think it's ever too early. You know, you need to start, because that's the only way you'll get the next opportunity is if people trust, you know, how you show up now.
And you need to be spending time absolutely every single day extending your brand outside of, you know, so you need to build your brand within your organization, but then extend it outside and you like write blogs or, you know, start becoming an expert in your field, you know, develop your LinkedIn connections, all of these kind of things that are outside your immediate job. You need to actually spend half an hour, an hour a day almost doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you on that, because you just never know where, you know, opportunities or customers or clients could come from. And like you said, continuing to build your skill set external to your company is important too, right? Because you know, people do get retrenched, and you need to know that your skill set is relevant outside of your company as well.
Yeah. And that's the growth mindset. So like, and every year doing courses, every year reading, all those kind of things. We can talk about such a lot of different things, but I listened to a podcast from the Global Leadership Summit, or I attended a webinar, and this guy was saying that you don't own a position or a leadership position or any kind of position in life, you rent it. And every day you pay the rent, and the rent is discipline in a way. And so when you go to work tomorrow, you know, and this is what you said about the mistake on the Excel spreadsheet, you're actually proving yourself almost every single day. You're renting that space.
Definitely.
It's the mindset we all need to have. You know,
if you stay at a company long enough, right, and you prove yourself and you can build some credibility, it's almost like a bank account, right? You deposit, you make all these deposits. And then let's say you do have a bit of a wobble, you make a mistake. That's a bit of a withdrawal, but you've built up enough credibility where I don't think people would write you off because you made that mistake, you know, unless it's like a catastrophic one. You know, but when you're early in your career, you just haven't built up enough, you haven't made enough deposits to be making a whole lot of withdrawals. So you got to think about it that way.
And could you tell us a little bit briefly about Korn Ferry? What is your role there? What do you do during the day as your day job?
So I'm a senior principal at Korn Ferry. As you mentioned in my introduction, it is a global organizational strategy.
11,000 employees, et cetera.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So we have an office here in Santa, and then an office in Cape Town. And so we focus in several different areas. We do diversity and inclusion work, which is where I work a tremendous amount. Leadership development, I also do work in that space. We do assessment and succession. We do executive search. We do reward and benefits. We do recruiting, outsourcing as well. We also have, you know, digital service offerings. So, you know, we run the gamut from a human capital perspective. And it's a really fantastic organization. Such great intellectual property, such great research. I'm really, really excited to have joined Korn Ferry almost, I guess it's probably been like a year and a half ago now. Great culture. Really smart people. Yeah, it's a fantastic place.
And what are your plans for 2021? Obviously, you're promoting your book, your fantastic book, which is almost like a second job. Like, that's why I'm speaking to you today.
A second job.
What other things are you doing? Are you doing any courses? How are you progressing? And you, we'll see, you know, keeping yourself going this year, 2021.
I'll add just one other thing to my book. My book is being sold in the US. It's going to be released in the UK. So I'm going to have to, you know, do some more marketing in those countries as well.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you know, kind of broadening my own skill set, I mean, that's the one thing I do love about Korn Ferry. We constantly have new things coming out. So I'm getting enabled on several different service offerings that we have. So that's definitely on tap for this year. And just excited to you know, we have one program called Power of Choice, which actually, funny enough, somebody who, let's say a company, you know, somebody who works in organizational development or effectiveness read my book and wanted to have a program that kind of accompanied my book, Power of Choice would be a great program to be able to. It's really helping underrepresented groups, whether it's women or minority groups or like majority groups here who represent minorities and, you know, in corporate South Africa, but just helping them kind of expand on what I'm talking about, mindset, and helping them really understand how can I be empowered in my career? What are the choices I can make that can help me be better and take more ownership of my career? So that's a program that I'm getting enabled in right now. So super excited about that too.
Cool. And that's what I think some people don't really understand. Like the good news and bad news that you talked about, like you think that maybe you finished all your studying and your personal development and stuff like that when you start your first job. Now, as I said three times already, I'm 50 and I've got to do 3 certifications in the next 2 months. And so it's like continuous learning the whole time.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because the world is continuously growing, right? And changing. Yeah. I mean, If this COVID experience has taught us nothing else, is that we cannot get complacent.
Absolutely.
We can't get complacent for sure.
And how can people keep follow you? Are you active on LinkedIn? Can people reach out to you on
Yeah,
there?
I'm everywhere under my name, basically, Carice Anderson. So
Okay.
Carice, and then Anderson with an O. You can find me on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram.
I'll have all those details in the show notes.
Oh,
And then
perfect.
obviously,
Thank
they
you.
can buy your fantastic book on Amazon
Yes.
and all the different other areas as well.
All the good bookstores in South Africa have my book.
And worldwide, it's at least 60% of this listeners are outside of South Africa, if not
Okay,
70%. So
awesome. Yeah, people can go on Amazon and buy the ebook. So y'all do
definitely.
that.
It's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much, Carice. And thank you for talking about your book, Intelligence Isn't Enough. I really, really enjoyed it. And I'm going to keep it, for as long as hopefully I'll keep it for the next 10 years until my girls can read it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lance.
And I hope you, the listener, found this as interesting and useful as I did. If you'd like to contact me, then please do. My email is lance@ideastorm.co.za. And my website is www.ideastorm.co.za or the businessbookshelfpodcast.com. And I'll have all of Carice's details in the show notes so you can look those up. And I'll have a blog about her and all the details on LinkedIn. But if you've read a book and you want me to interview the author, please let me know. Then I'll try and interview the author and get them onto the podcast. So thanks again, Carice. Enjoy. Stay safe. Stay well.
Thank you. You too, Lance.
Until
Bye-bye.
next time. Goodbye, everybody. Bye.